another episode of Nest in Style on Horticulture Radio, where we bring you special monthly reports on plants, products, and tools to make your life in the garden more enjoyable. I'm Jamie Jenkins with AhaModernLiving.com.
And I'm Teresa O'Connor from SeasonalWisdom.com. It's July, and I don't know about you, but my garden is in full bloom right now. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. But gosh, it took long enough.
I know. It was a slow spring because it was cooler and wetter on the northwest than normal, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of my warmer season perennials or annuals did not do very well, and I'm having to replant them again already. But majority of the things that have been established in my garden, they're so beautiful right now.
That's great. And you know what's funny? I'm actually eating peas from my garden right now in early July, which is very late for us. That's really at least a month later than normal. But we had such a cool and wet spring that I have peas coming in and my beans are easily a month behind. So we just have to adjust as gardeners, don't we, Jamie?
We totally do. Like some of the warm annual herbs that I'm used to planting at the same time I did this year were probably 3 weeks too soon just because of the long wet spring that we had, like my basil, for instance. I was used to planting it at the same time I did last year, but it was still too cold, and so it just didn't take. So I ended up having to plant them all over again.
So that's really the topic of our podcast today. How do you keep your garden looking great in the middle of summer, especially when you have all those activities going on and you don't have all the time in the world to spend out there weeding?
Exactly, because all it takes is a couple of really warm days after a rain spout, and your peas will have taken off like no other before you even got a chance to stake them to your peat trellis.
I know, isn't that the truth? So that's what we wanted to focus on today, some of the most common but important tasks that you have to do in the garden, particularly now when your garden is in full bloom at full peak. But we have a giveaway, don't we, Jamie?
Absolutely.
And it's a big one. We've got a lot of things to really help you get through the rest of the growing season and keep your garden looking great.
We have quite the giveaway to help you keep your garden looking its best for the rest of the growing season. Number one, we have the book from myself as the co-author and Billy Brownell as the other co-author, Garden Rules, the Snappy Synopsis for the Modern Gardener. The Corona E-Grip Weeder with Cast Aluminum Head, an awesome weeder tool, which Teresa will talk about a little bit later. And the Corona Dual Cut Bypass Pruner, which we talk about deadheading a little bit later. This is going to be a perfect tool for doing all of your deadheading needs. And Job's Organic Fertilizer. And we'll tell you why this particular organic fertilizer is just a little bit different from the rest. Then we have Garden Safe Organic Garden Weed Preventer, which is 100% corn gluten. And we want to make sure that you listen to the rest of the podcast so you learn how to apply this weed preventer to your garden, because there is a difference between treatment and prevention. And lastly, we have the Soft Binder Plant Ties, which is from my store, ahamodernliving.com. We wish you the best of luck, and we'll have more details on how you can enter this contest on our podcast page, which you can find on www.hortmag.com. Look for Nest in Style in the category section, and you'll find our podcast there.
One of the first things we're going to talk about today is weeding. And I don't know about you, Jamie, but weeding is probably one of my least favorite gardening tasks.
You know, I used to think so, and actually it probably now depends on the day, but I actually don't mind weeding.
Well, you know, there is a therapeutic benefit and the sense of satisfaction to seeing your garden all weeded after you've spent a lot of time working on it. But let's face it, most of us would rather spend our time in the garden doing more fun things. And the secret to weeding is to keep on top of it, you know, to spend a little bit of time each day looking for it and to weed when your soil is is wet. That makes it easier to remove the roots, which is what you really want to do with perennial weeds. Another secret is to keep your soil covered in some way. That way, weed seeds won't find a bare spot in your garden and start growing like crazy. That's why it's good to have mulch in your garden. And you can do that with a couple inches of organic matter like fine wood chips or compost or straw. You want to avoid hay because hay often has a lot of weed seeds. And mulch has a whole lot of benefits that we won't get into right now, but it does really help to keep the weeds down. You can also grow living mulches, such as ground covers like aromatic thyme or drought-tolerant succulents or even a shade-loving vinca. And these living mulches will help to prevent weeds from having space to sprout up in your garden, too. Now, it's also helpful to know the difference between perennials and annual weeds. For instance, annual weeds like crabgrass and chickweed and purslane and morning glories and even lamb quarters, these spread through your garden by seed. And these seeds can be carried by the wind, by your clothes, or a bird. I mean, it's amazing how many seeds can be produced in a minute flying over your front yard. And, you know, these annual weeds come in the cold season and they come in the warm season as well. Now, luckily, most of these weeds are pretty easy to remove. So if you can just keep up with them and try to get the weeds while they're young, right before they're flowering, you can save thousands of weed seeds from flying upon your yard. Now, perennial weeds are more devilish because, as you know, Jamie, they live for more than 2 years and they spread by seed and by root. So you unfortunately have to get all of the root out or they're going to resprout again, which is a real bummer. Now, you'll recognize a lot of the perennial weeds because they tend to be the weeds like dandelions and pokeweed and curly dock and ground ivy. And we're going to have another link on our podcast site from the North Carolina Cooperative Extension. And that will tell you more about certain weeds, but you can also find your own local weeds by visiting your local master gardeners or cooperative extension. You know, Jamie, we're not really the biggest advocates of spraying herbicides, are we?
No, I try to avoid it at all costs, really, if I don't have to.
Because, you know, that can hurt some household pets and beneficial pollinators, and you really need to be careful. So we try to focus on more earth-friendly ways of controlling weeds. And there are several ways you can dig out weeds, particularly dandelions, which again, you have to get that long taproot out. And I personally like the Corona Tools, which is the Corona Clipper E-Grip Weeder. And it's inexpensive. It's under $10, and it's actually part of our Nest and Style giveaway package. And what I like about it is it's got an ergonomically designed grip, so it's really easy to hold onto it. And it's got a long aluminum blade that's serrated, so it really cuts into the roots and rips the root right out of the garden. I mean, I can't believe how well it pulls dandelions out of my garden. I still have a million more to keep pulling out all the time, but it helps me to at least keep on top of them. And then I heard about this Uproot Weed and Root Remover, which is quite interesting. You don't have to bend over. It's kind of a taller thing, and it positions a stainless steel claw over the weed. And when you step on a lever, it pulls back the handle, and the claws pull out weeds like dandelions and thistles by the roots. And that's about $40. Now, Jamie, you use something else in the garden to weed, don't you?
Yes, I sure do. One of my favorite tools is the Hori Hori garden knife. And I'm still surprised to this day how many experienced gardeners are actually not aware of this Japanese design tool. And it's been around for a really long time. And really, Japanese design is synonymous with modern design. And so it's very sleek, it's very simple, but it's one of my favorite tools because I can do so many different things with it, not just for weeding. I can dig out small holes to plant bulbs. I can plant seeds. I can draw lines in the dirt. If I just want to plant a simple row of seeds, I can cut pesky roots out like dandelion weeds. It's great because you can just physically stab the blade into the soil and wiggle it around, which makes that taproot a lot easier to pull out. And it's great for digging out weeds in the cracks of driveways, walkways, patios, and whatnot. And even when your lawn or your garden bed meets up against the straight edge, it's really great for taking out pesky weeds where any other tool will not quite get in there straight edge of a patio or a sidewalk. And so it's forged from high carbon steel. So on one side, it's a blade, and on the back side, it's a serrated edge so that it makes cutting roots in the soil a lot easier. And it's a great tool, and it's affordable. And like I said before, you can use it for so many other different garden tasks, not just for weeding.
That's great. I mean, anything that can allow you to get those roots out easily, particularly in wet soil, will help you to kind of get those weeds under control. You can also use a process, if you have a big field with a ton of weeds, you can try solarization, which is where you cover an area of soil with transparent plastic, and you allow the sun heat to actually kill the weed seeds and any bad nematoids that might be in the soil. They're experimenting with this right now in a lot of agricultural fields, and we'll have a link on our podcast page from the Oregon State University about that. And don't forget about corn gluten. Corn gluten is a byproduct of the wet milling process, and it's a safe way to fight pre-emergent weeds. It can really control everything from dandelions to foxtail to purslane to pigweed and crabgrass, and it's also very helpful to you in your turf, because you don't need to worry about your kids or your pets running across the lawn and having dangerous herbicides on them. Now, we will be giving away a large container of Garden Safe Garden Weed Preventer, which is 100% corn gluten meal, and it's safe to use even in your vegetable beds, and it will help to keep these weeds away for 4 weeks and cover over 250 square feet. So that's another thing we've got in this emergency garden package for the winter. And you should definitely look for corn gluten products under a number of brands, because it's a good organic way to control pre-emergent weeds throughout your garden.
I was just going to say, to ask you to clarify that, because it is, you keep saying keep away and pre-emergent. So just so everybody understands what that means, this isn't something that you apply on top of a weed to make it go away. It's something that you apply before they sprout to keep them from growing in your yard. Is that correct, Teresa?
That is correct, Jamie. Thank you very much. That's why you are the best podcast partner. And just to make sure that we're clearer about that, mm-hmm. I have a link from the Idaho State University about corn gluten and kind of how it works. This, again, is particularly effective to apply in the fall because, as you mentioned, Jamie, it kills the weeds before they germinate. This is why it's pre-emerging weeds. So before they emerge, it kills them safely.
There you go. I tell you, we love our Master Gardener resources. What would we do without them?
So, Jamie, what about this whole deadheading process? I know in my garden, that's probably one of the most time-consuming jobs, to kind of keep everything deadheaded so that new growth can come.
Yeah, you know, it's really one of those things, and it's something that you have control over. Weeds, not so much. I mean, they can blow in everywhere. Certainly there are things you can do that you just mentioned to keep them away. But really, the plants you bring into your garden, you know, will depend upon how much you will be deadheading during the season. And this is one of the topics that we cover in my book that's also going to be one of our giveaways. I call the chapter Deadheading Isn't Just for Rock Concerts. And that book is Garden Rules, which I co-authored with Billy Brownell, who is the garden editor for Cool Springs Press. Anyway, so to get on with deadheading, basically what it is you're cutting off spent flowers so you can prolong a plant's blooming time. Okay, so this is, you know, a good idea to do, that if you want to have a longer blooming time throughout the season, you'll cut them off. So then that way the plant's energy is putting it into creating new flowers and new buds rather than wasting energy in creating seeds. Now, there are some perennials like peonies, and you were mentioning, Teresa, that you have some single blooming roses out there that you, no matter what you do, or how many flowers you cut off, you cannot coax that plant into creating more buds. But what you will do is you'll be creating a better looking plant throughout the season. So, you know, I lost the battle to my peonies this year. I did what I could to do all the soil so that they stood up nice and pretty. They just ended up flopping over during one of our rainstorms. So what did I do? I cut them off, put them in a vase, and the plant will still look good through the rest of the season.
You know, in that case, your deadheading is almost like a pruning process to help shape the plant.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's a number of different reasons why we deadhead. Some, there's pinching methods so you can keep a plant at a certain height. We're not going to get into that right now, but just know that there's more than one reason why we deadhead. And for certain plants, if you don't deadhead, remove those flowers before they go to seed, you're going to have a lot more garden maintenance come springtime, like columbine, bachelor buttons, yarrow. These are common flowers that if you let them go to seed, you're going to find millions of little cousins in your garden the following season. So that's another reason why we deadhead, is to keep the self-seeding flowers under control.
That's a good point. Now, in the colder climates, a lot of times some of these perennials are not really deadheaded in the final pruning in the fall because it helps them to withstand the colder temperatures, to have the longer stems. And it kind of gives you a little bit of winter interest. But what you're talking about is very important, Jamie, because as the plant starts to go to seed, like you said, then it actually starts to go through the dying process.
Absolutely. And rather than taking up too much time on our podcast to talk about all the different plants and how you would prune them differently or deadhead them differently, we're going to include a link on the podcast page and give you some helpful tips on the different perennials and how you would prune them differently to make them look better and make them last longer throughout the growing season.
In July, it's often time to fertilize your garden again as well, depending on what type of fertilizer you're using. Now, there are differences between organic versus conventional fertilizers, and some of it is personal preference, but there are a number of benefits to fertilizers that are made with organic materials. And these benefits are that organic fertilizers tend to release nutrients more slowly, so that this prevents too many nutrients from being released to the plant all at once, and you can avoid things like plant burn. And that's important because too much fertilizer can be very dangerous for a plant. In fact, when plants such as tomatoes, for example, or roses receive too much nutrients such as nitrogen, they can experience very rapid growth, and as a result, they're not as strong a plant. They become spindly, and it also increases aphids who nibble on the new growth. Also, organic fertilizers have materials that encourage healthy microbes and organic matter in your soil. So they're actually not just providing nutrients, but they're improving the quality of your soil. Their contents of organic fertilizers are typically biodegradable. This is unlike many conventional fertilizers, so they are more easily absorbed back into the earth without environmental implications. These organic fertilizers are often safer around pets and children than conventional fertilizers, although we would encourage you to use caution, to pay attention to the labels, and always keep these types of materials away from children and animals because organic fertilizers can be just as dangerous. I'm trying a number of organic fertilizers this summer, which I'm testing. I'm testing Winchester Gardens organic vegetable and berry fertilizer spikes around my raspberries and also in my eggplants, onions, and peppers this summer. And these stakes are pre-measured for easy, convenient use, and the ingredients promote microorganism activity. So again, they're improving the quality of the soil. You only need to reapply them every 8 weeks, so that's practically a full growing season in a northern climate. I'm also a big fan of Authentic Haven brand manure teas, which I believe you also sell, Jamie, at AHA Modern Living. These manure teas are made from alfalfa, horses, and cows, which are raised on Annie Haven's California ranch. So it's kind of a closed cycle fertilizer. You know exactly where the raw materials are coming from. It's all being processed very cleanly. And if you can make a pot of sun tea, then you can make these manure teas. In fact, I usually have a big glass container steeping for a day or two of these manure teas, and I like to water my salad greens and vegetables with them. And because these liquid nutrients get soaked into the plants quickly, they actually generate a lot of growth quickly as well in a release format. And so
So,
the only
Teresa, I actually had one question from a customer. Does your lettuce actually taste like poop?
No, not at all. And anytime you use fertilizer, you have to be careful to wash very carefully. You know, you do want to warn people when you have that big glass sun tea container filled with manure tea that it is not, I repeat, not for human consumption because it can get pretty dangerous because it does look like sun tea. I'm just saying. So avoid accidents, you know, mark it carefully. And speaking of manure, I've also started to test a product called Poop Peas, spelled Poopeas. These clever named things are organic pelletized manure compost, and they're from an Idaho farmer. And what's nice is that they don't smell at all, and they're very easy to spread because they're like little pellets. And so it's kind of an environmental friendly way to deal with a lot of cow waste, if you know what I mean, because these dairy operations have a lot of manure, and we actually can benefit from having the manure in our gardens. So it's a nice way to transport it. And I've been using it on my house plants because it's really easy to apply these little pellets, and it doesn't smell at all. So I've been real happy with that. And we'll have links to all of those. And one more fertilizer I'm testing, and this is actually going to be in our package that we're giving out to gardeners this month. And it's called Jobe's Organic Fertilizer with Biozome. And what's interesting about this fertilizer is that it's 100% organic, but it features a microorganism called archaea. And this is a beneficial microorganism that exists in nature, and it aggressively breaks down organic matter faster into basic nutrients so that plants can readily absorb it. Because, you know, things have to decompose over time, and that can take a long time, especially with organic materials. So this is a faster way to get the nutrients to the plant. According to Easy Gardener, who is the manufacturer of this product, to create a healthy soil in nature, you need bacteria, fungi, and archaea. But the fast-acting one, this archaea, has been missing in fertilizers because it hasn't been able to be grown commercially. And they were able to find out how to grow it commercially in the recent cleanup in the oil spill, you know, the BP oil spill last summer. And they call this archaea biozome. Even though organic fertilizers may contain other bacteria and microbes that are very good and healthy, such as, and also fungi, they do not contain this biozome. One lucky winner will be receiving a big bag of this, and we're real curious how it does in your garden and whether this archaea fast acting microorganism really produces for you, like they're saying it does in all these other studies. So this is just a number of fertilizers you can try. Just be careful that you apply the right fertilizer to the right kind of plant and that you pay attention to the directions because it really does matter about using the right quantities.
So just like we were saying earlier in the show about going away for a weekend, two nice summer warm days, you come back and your peas are out of control and you haven't had a chance. Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. It was raining, it was cold, and then out of the blue, there were two sunny days and nice 75 degree weather. And my peas literally grew, I swear, 8 feet by the time I got back. And when I got back, they were doubled over. You know,
Oh my gosh.
yeah, it was a tragic sight. And you know, I've begun to believe that peas are a little, they're kind of mean to each other. You know, they're little tendrils that reach out and are supposed to be grabbing a hold of your trellis. They start grabbing a hold of themselves and start weighting each other down. So this is so important to stake and support your peas.
Absolutely. Don't let your peas start attacking each other.
That's right. They don't play nice when you're not around. That's for sure. So basically, I mean, for obvious reasons, we want to support our plants so they don't look ugly and so your garden looks more tidy if you're into that. Other reasons why, like my peas, they've doubled over and they can actually snap under their own weight. Luckily, I was able to straighten them up, supply the supports, and save some of them. But some of them did actually snap in half, and those are hard to salvage. So, you know, after a long cry, we were able to move on. There's a number of things you can use out there that you probably have in your garage, and a number of store-bought items you can use to support your plants. And to me, when I was looking through them and in my own experience, there's three different categories of plant supports. You have poles, which you can use bamboo, or you can actually buy bamboo poles at the store, or they have those tomato spirals that you can use. Cages are another category. You can get anything from the $2 cheapo tomato cages, or you can buy the nice sturdy ones. You can buy really decorative ones. And the third type of support is more of like a grid type. I don't know if there's a name for them, but you see a lot of them in the stores for supporting clumping plants in perennials like peonies. They get so heavy under their weight, and then they just kind of flay over and split open from the middle. Let's talk about some plants that you can use the pole type supports. They would be like delphiniums, Jacob's ladder, a lot of the really tall supports you can actually stake them with poles. And we have a nice product that I sell on ahamodernliving.com. They're called soft binder ties. And what they basically do, and it's kind of hard to describe, but you're creating two loops. One loop goes around the pole, the other loop goes around the plant stem. And it can be a tomato, like I said, or a delphinium, anything that's probably about 1 inch to 2 inches around. And they get bigger in size, so you can actually stake a tree, you know, a young tree to a pole as well. And that's actually going to be a part of our Nest and Style giveaway. So those are really cool. And what I love about them is that they're reusable. One thing about the poles you'll want to do, if you can manage it, is put the stakes in early spring or when you're planting your tomatoes, let's say, because if you wait too long, like I had, you'll have to put in the stake and then you'll risk damaging the roots later on in the growing season. So like we mentioned before, supporting clumping plants like coreopsis or coneflowers, because coneflowers can actually tend to, if you don't deadhead them like we talked about before, they can actually fall over under their own weight. You can use a cage type support. Even I've seen people use tomato cages. It's not the prettiest thing. Or you can use just a collection of bamboo poles, just scatter them around the plant, and then you can use a biodegradable twine or, you know, some other twine and just create a cage or a loop around the plant. Another product that I sell and a lot of other people sell are the English Y stakes. This is not going to be a part of our giveaway, but it's a really cool item. They come in different heights for taller and shorter perennials, but basically you stick it in the ground and it's got these two green pliable wire arms that can kind of hug the plants around. So if the plant is really large because it's been established for quite some time, you can bend them around part of the plant and use, again, a biodegradable twine and tie both ends and create the end of the loop. So again, you're creating a cage type support. So lastly, the cage type support or the grid type supports, excuse me, I like to use those for my coneflowers as well because the flower or the plants actually grow up through the grid and they're a lot less visible than some of the other pole and cage type supports. So I tend to use those for my coneflowers and my peonies and any other type of clumping plant where I want the support, but I don't want to see the support later in the season.
Can we talk a little bit about pests? Because this spring and summer, the birds, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love birds, but they attacked my lettuces, my beans, and my raspberries. And if I hadn't been happening to test Ross tree netting, I don't know what I would have done. I mean, this was the worst year I've ever had to deal with birds, but it made me really a fan of bird netting. Because sometimes, you know, birds cannot eat every single thing in your garden, you know?
It's nice and to attract wildlife, but not to, you know.
Exactly. I feed them enough. They don't have to, you know, eat my lettuces. Yeah. And also, you know, in terms of other types of pest damage or heavy winds or frost, Johnny Seeds has a wide selection of row covers. And row covers function in the same way that bird netting do. They're actually a netting with different size holes that are designed for different purposes, and they really help to protect your plants from birds to pests to very low temperatures. So that's certainly a good organic way to protect your plants from different types of things like pests or bad weather.
That is a great example of a physical control, is you're actually creating a barrier to keep out a pest and protect your desirable plants. And physical controls is exactly what it sounds like, is you are physically removing or blocking a pest from any given area in your garden. When somebody was trying to explain to me what physical control was, fly swatting is actually a physical control. You're using something to get rid of a pest. Other methods include like taking a flashlight out at night into your garden. It's also fun to do with kids if you have them. In search for snails and just hand pick them off. Do whatever you want with them. Some people put them in a bath of beer or salt brine, whatever, throw them against the fence. It's up to you. But hand picking them off the plants is an example of a physical control. Spraying soft body insects like aphids and mites or lace bugs, spraying them off with the hose and drowning them is another example of a physical control that does not require much effort. Pruning plants with heavy infestations like aphids. Aphids love my backyard, and just recently I had to hand pick, or I should say hand prune, some of the flowers on my annuals in my containers because there were just so many aphids. I mean, it wouldn't even have been worth it to spray it with water because there was just so many of them. So I just hand prune them off and then check back in a few days to see if there were any lingering aphids, and I just squished them between my fingers, and there were. And then actually, lo and behold, the plant ended up being okay without me having to do any other type of method to control that pest.
That's great, Jamie. And you know, when you prune off those pieces on the plants, people, be sure to put them in plastic bags and throw them away. You don't want to compost any plants that have pest damage with like aphids and so on.
That's,
Just a reminder.
yes, that is a very good point. And thank you, Teresa. That's why you are the best podcast co-host. We're looking out for each other. And so row covers, like Teresa was mentioning, is a good physical control, not just with birds, but flying insects. A lot of leaf miners, they come from a flying fly and lays their little eggs, and that's where you get the little leaf miners in your lettuces and your spinaches and your beets, everything. Anyway, I mean, I can keep going on and on about the different types of physical controls. There's really so many things you can do, like bear traps, sticky barriers, copper tape to keep out the slugs. You can vacuum. I've never vacuumed my garden, but you
What do you think
can.
about sluggo? I mean, when I lived in California, I actually like sluggo
You
as a
know,
way to control slugs.
I love sluggo. I mean, I do a number of physical methods, but you know, I can't just be out there pinching and spraying and poking things all day long. So certain plants, I will sprinkle sluggo. And it's a great product. It's biodegradable. And these little pellets are made of iron phosphate. And they add these little, additives to attract the snails from their hiding spots. But basically, the slug will ingest it and it will stop feeding and it becomes immobile. And after a while, it basically just starves to death. And the benefit of this product is that it's non-toxic to pet and wildlife. So it's very safe. It's very eco-friendly. And I love it. The only thing is, after a few days of rain, you may have to keep reapplying it. But the pellets that are not ingested by the slugs or snails, it's biodegradable. It will just, disappear into the soil.
Yeah, that's the great part. And also, there's insecticidal soaps you can consider.
You bring up a very good option with insecticidal soaps for the home gardener, and this is a preferred option with home gardeners for a number of different reasons, because soaps can be used for a wide range of plant pests, and most often they're going to be the small soft body arthropods like aphids, mealybugs, and spider mites, and there's many more. And the ease of use of this product is often preferred because of its safety and selectivity of its action. Appeal to many people. The limitations of this application can be that the soaps or the insects need to be wet during the application of the process. And if you're using a home remedy, this can often damage the plant. It's maybe effective for the pest or the insect that you're trying to treat, but it's not great for the plant because a lot of home detergents that you use in your kitchen to clean your plates and your kitchenware, it has not been tested to use on plants. And so often it can damage, the residual effect can damage the plants. If you're going to purchase this, to read the label, obviously. If you're going to make your own home remedy, it's really important to dilute this product. And so we're going to include a resource that you can look at from the Colorado State University to learn more about this as an effective pest management process.
So between weeding and deadheading and staking and fighting off mad birds and pests. I mean, there's certainly a lot of ways to keep yourself busy in the garden, but hopefully we've been able to give you a lot of inexpensive ways to control these kind of issues right now. And we've also tried to recommend some different products that we have found have been helpful for us. So many of these links will be included on our podcast page. And we always are interested in what you think about these products and whether or not they work for you as well.
Yes, and let's remind people where they can find us online so that way they can share their comments and their feedbacks about the products we discuss on our podcast. So you can go to www.hortmag.com and look for the Hort Radio in the category section, and then just look for Nest and Style on Horticulture Radio. You can also find us on iTunes. Just search for Horticulture Radio, and there you'll find not only Nest and Style on Horticulture Radio, but also other podcasts put on by other garden writers like Kathy Kropp. She does the How to Garden, and Andrew Keys also does Radio Garden, which are other valuable information sources on topics all about gardening. You can also find us on Facebook, Nest in Style on Facebook. We have a lot of conversations going on there as well. So many different ways to connect with us online. We hope to see you there. And we want to thank every one of you again for listening and for participating and sharing your comments. We definitely appreciate it.
So, Jamie, wait, before we end this podcast, I think we really need to announce the winner of last month's giveaway.
You are absolutely right, Teresa. Let's first announce our first prize winner, and that goes to Laura. And she wins an autographed copy of Our Shadow Garden by Sherry Foster Colburn, and also the Kids Garden Hand Tool Set from my store, ahamodernliving.com. So congratulations to you, Laura. Our second prize winner goes to Kim Barker, and she wins a copy of How to Grow a School Garden by Arden Buckland Sporer and Rachel Kathleen Pringle, published by Timber Press. And for those of you who have listened to Nest and Style podcast and have yet to have the opportunity to win one of our awesome giveaways, this month offers you another opportunity to win another fabulous gift prize. So we wish you lots of luck. And in the meantime, go grow something.